US President Donald Trump will today host three Pacific Island leaders at the White House. This is the first time this has happened in history, as the US-China rivalry pushes both nations to boost their Pacific ties. Donald Trump will meet with the presidents of the Federated States of Micronesia, Marshall Islands and Palau. All three Pacific countries have strategic agreements with America that give them military control over their airspace and their waters. This meeting comes as the US-China relationship continues to slide, with Donald Trump blacklisting Chinese telco Huawei over national security concerns. Pat Buchan is the director of the US Alliances Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C. Pat Buchan, welcome to RM Breakfast.
Hi, Fran. Thanks for having me on.
This meeting is being described as historic. How significant is it, the fact that Donald Trump has invited these three Pacific Island leaders to the White House?
Yeah, look, Fran, this is very significant in terms of where Washington sits. You know, I mean, the reality is it wasn't too long ago you needed a very wide straw to see, you know, the South Pacific from here in Washington, D.C. It just wasn't something that was high on the radar at the State Department, at the Pentagon, in the White House. What's happened in the post-Cold War environment, where the United States wrongly assumed that that region was strategically benign, we've seen China's ambitions grow, and we've seen Chinese interference throughout the region. And I think that was the United States' assumption that they took, that this area was kind of quote-unquote part of Australia's patch, was something that the United States took for granted. So you are seeing the United States sort of mirroring Australia's step-up strategy. You know, the fact that the president is meeting the three leaders of three very tiny outposts in the Pacific here in Washington, the White House, is a strong signal that's deliberately done to the United States, to the region and to China.
Yeah, as you say, some of these countries are tiny. The Federated States of Micronesia, Marshall Islands, Palau. When we speak of the Pacific, we don't necessarily even speak of these countries in particular. So what is the strategic value of these three nations, as you understand it, to the US? Why these three?
Look, friend, exactly. So I think there's an important caveat that many of your listeners in Australia probably wouldn't be aware of. In the, following the Second World War, the United Nations created a mandate in which these three territories were placed under United States territorial control, a little bit like Papua New Guinea was for Australia.
Yep.
So the United States assumed responsibility for these countries, and then from the mid-1980s onwards, handed these countries back to some elements of sovereign control themselves. So they joined the community of nations. And the caveat there was the fact that these countries would, the United States deal was, look, we'll give you independence, but we will retain military control. You won't have your armed forces, and we will have basing and air access rights, etc. So for the United States, the treaties that govern that relationship are coming up for renewal in 2023. So this is not just about a symbology of the United States recognizing the rising need for US involvement in the region, but it is also a bureaucratic and practical necessity for the United States to start thinking about how they're going to renegotiate these treaties. Obviously, given the era we're living in, it is something the United States is very keen to ensure that they maintain these treaties. The other thing with these three countries, the other thing that's important to remember is if you get out of the map and have a look where they're strategically located, you know, they're located between Guam, between the U.S. state of Hawaii. Mm-hmm. So for the United States, in terms of its power projection, these territories offer, unbridled access into the region for the United States to be able to, base its forces, but also to project its power throughout the region. And I think additionally, there is that the legacy issue that the United States does have about doing the right thing with its former territories.
Okay, and I guess it's a two-way relationship too. I think the Compacts of Free Association provides U.S. grants and public services and other benefits to these countries, so they have an interest too.
Absolutely.
In this ongoing agreement. But it's definitely in the new strategic environment, which was described. I noticed recently the Center for Strategic and International Studies report called on the U.S. to boost what Abbott described it as inadequate diplomatic presence across the Pacific. So the backdrop to this is China's more robust presence in the Pacific. It's poured a lot of money in. We've talked about that a lot in recent times, what China is doing and trying to achieve strategically in the region and making big steps before anyone really noticed. And the backdrop to this, of course, currently is the deteriorating China-US relationship.
Absolutely. I think that one of the misnomers that is out there, and I think, to be frank, that one that China doesn't like to talk about, it's the fact that Australia remains the largest total aid development donor to the region. And not only does it have the largest aid donation, but it also has the largest pledges. If you look at the latest figures, say 2011 to 2018, Australia is the biggest player in terms of dollars, nearly 11 billion Australian dollars.
But that's not really surprising given the geography, is it?
No, not at all. Not at all. But the point being that for Australia, it is obviously its region. For China, it is its near region. If you look at where the United States is at, it's down at $2 billion. So there is a recognition here in Washington that more needs to be done, and not in, competition or collusion with Australia, but rather with cooperation with Australia, with New Zealand, with Japan. So those top donors to the region, Australia, Japan, the United States, New Zealand, all remain in the United States column. So Australia, the United States is looking to lift its share, not only of diplomatic footprint on the ground, but also in terms of dollars. We saw the Vice President's announcement before APEC back in November last year. He gave that speech at the Hudson Institute here in Washington where he recognised the United States had sort of taken its foot, if you will, off the accelerator in the region, and the United States, in parallel with Australia's Pacific step up, New Zealand's reset, that the United States is back in the region. The United States has realised that it hasn't sort of lifted its weight as much as it should have. And that comes back to, if you will, the strategic assumptions. Following the Cold War, the United States assumed there was no sort of, great power competition, not
yes.
only globally, but particularly in that region.
Well, that's all changed, obviously, and that was a major point of discussion during the South Pacific Forum, and the Australian government and the US government, right. Banding together to make major promises, and it was really all through that prism. There was another issue, though, on display at the South Pacific Forum and since, and that was climate change. Pacific leaders standing up and criticising major developed countries, and it was assumed that means the United States and Australia for not doing enough and not caring enough about their situations. Are these three leaders likely to be raising this with the US president when they meet, given, Donald Trump's decision that America will pull out of the Paris Accord?
Friend, you hit the nail on the head. There's a little bit of nuance to this. Absolutely, climate change is their number one issue. And those three leaders have said so publicly, and I can promise you we'll raise that in their meeting tomorrow, your time in Sydney, with the president. In 2012, the Obama administration started to recognise the sort of backwater that the way they'd seen the South Pacific. So they upped their aid development model and their dollars, and they particularly focused on climate change adaption, disease prevention, and governance. The issue, I think, between the administration and the countries of Micronesia and Palau and the Marshall Islands, the issue is going to be not one of climate change adaption, but it's dancing on the head of a pin in terms of, is climate change man-made or is it a natural occurrence, which is kind of a policy nuance debate. But the United States is recognising climate change as real. It's not something that
the
administration shut. Yeah, right. I don't think it's something that the administration's shying away from. So
okay.
They're not sort of denying to these countries that's a reality. It's just about, what's the cause of it.
Okay. And will America reconsider Paris, I would imagine? Pat, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Fran. I appreciate you having me on.
Pat Buchan, the director of the US Alliances Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C. It's 14 minutes to 7.